Thank you. So it's wonderful to be here and of course, to be a part of this very distinguished meeting. I think you just heard about a wonderful interplay between information science and physics, and what I'll talk about is an interplay between information science and biology. The chair, Professor Arma, actually introduced this idea of genome sequencing and how it is another sort of fantastic frontier of science. And he talked about the human genome sequence as being, if it's written in books, will be 700 volumes or 16 stories high, or something pretty amazing. But when you think about it as information, when you actually sequence a human genome, typically, Dr. Arma said, you chop it up into pieces. You take several copies because you may make mistakes. And so if you take 30 copies of the genome, chop it up using, you know, the restriction enzymes that he invented, you image those sequences. The amount of data you'll generate is somewhere between 1 and 5 terabytes. Okay. Now you convert those images into actual ACGT sequences, and that's about 100 gigabytes of data. Right? And now you take this 100 gigabytes of data and you have to do algorithms on them and reassemble the sequence and then start studying the sequence. So this was the specter that was thrown up by people who worked on the Human Genome Project, and the next speaker was one of them. And it seemed pretty clear that computer science would play a role, right? And so about 15 years ago, I stepped out from being a professor of computer science and started looking at biology, and that's been the journey that I've been on. And of course, I do it in a company, I do it with universities, and I also help the Indian biotech sector, as mentioned in my affiliations, and also I'm delighted to be here to be as part of the high panel to UNESCO on science and technology. So let me get started. I think this picture is about the Human Genome Project, and in many ways it's also a picture that tells you about molecular biology, modern molecular biology, starting around 1950 and, you know, still continuing at a phenomenal pace. Now, the project that I mentioned, which is a history of science project, is that if you overlay developments in information sciences, in computer science, along that timeline, there are some remarkable, you know, connections. And I don't know if Anu's in the audience, but, you know, if you'll invite me to Berkeley for a sabbatical, this is what I'd work on. Right. So so I think there's a wonderful history of science project here, that these two subjects have sort of co-evolved over the last 6 decades, and there's some wonderful intersections. I'm just picking genome sequencing as one topic, but one could look at recombinant technologies, and various other aspects of biology as well, and I'm sure you would see lots of connections. I think this has already been brought up, Moore's Law, but in the context of electronics, think about something like this in biology, right? And that same human genome project, the first one, cost the US government about $2.7 billion. I think soon after that, when Jim Watson's DNA was sequenced, it was done for, I think Craig Venter was first, for about $300 million. And then Jim Watson for about $2 million, and so on. And actually, this is halving roughly at about every 5 months. Right. So it's much faster than Moore's Law. And the prediction by people like Charles Cantor and so on has been that we will get to a $100 genome, right? And this is human genome. We're probably somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000 right now. $2,000 if you go to China and get it done, and and $5,000 if you do it in the Bay Area, right? And but China is going to make this $100 thing happen. I think it's going to give that final push. You know, it's pretty much like what's happened in solar technology. I think that final push is going to come from China. And I heard about a week ago that they have already cloned a couple of the sequencing machines. So it's not surprising, I think. So pretty soon you'll hear about sequencing technology coming out of China. So I believe that this $100 genome will happen. And in fact, Jason, which is the group that advises the US Department of Defense, actually predicts it'll happen even earlier, right? In a couple of years. Right? So what does this do to the whole field, right? It basically generates so much data that it is choking the science, right? So Gretchen talked about the fourth paradigm, and this is the fourth paradigm sort of in your face, right? It's data is doubling roughly again at about every 6 months. And you know, I think scientists are sitting with experiments that they did 6, 8, 10 months ago, waiting for their bioinformaticians to eventually get to the data, right? So it's just becoming a huge challenge. And this is anywhere in the world. And I think, you know, this is clearly something that we can all collaborate on and cooperate on. This is one way in which you can actually use, young talent in many parts of the world, because one of the things that's happening already is that companies like Illumina and so on are pumping their sequence data directly into the cloud. So what's happening is that with the MySeq and eventually the HiSeq as well, as the sequencing gets done, the data gets pushed into the Amazon EC2, and so essentially you could be sitting anywhere and working on that data, analyzing it, annotating it. So just like for the Y2K problem, the Indian services industry sort of took off, this could be annotators sitting anywhere in the world, annotating the genomes that get sequenced and put up. So there's a very interesting sort of possibility here, and I think it'll take agencies like UNESCO and the World Science Forum to think about how to coordinate all of this. I'm going to just touch on one other idea, topic, which I think is again, it's a very important interface between information science and the life sciences, and this has to do with actually virtualizing pharmaceutical research and being able to study drug discovery, biology, disease biology, much more on the computer than we have done so far. And I think we all, as we all know, pharmaceutical industry, including the very successful ones in Europe, are eventually going to run into trouble because their pipelines are not rich enough. The molecules are running out of patent life. And, you know, there aren't too many blockbusters left, right? And so unless you can bring down the costs of doing research and discovering therapeutics, it's really going to be a very different world going ahead. And so you know, for years now, people have talked about, you know, being able to, you know, understand disease and design therapeutics and diagnostics based on models, and moving biology really from being purely a phenomenological science into becoming a predictive science. And the question is, are we there yet? Do we have enough data? Do we have enough understanding? Can we start putting this together? And that's another, you know, wonderful agenda, I think, to think about as a global challenge. Of course, there are various ways we can go about doing this. This is just one scheme which we use, and this is a little pitch for our company, but it has been an effective way of collecting data, generating insights, and you know, one of the beautiful things is as you build models, you can actually generate hypotheses and go back to experiments to test them. So you really want to use computers to explore and experiments to confirm, right? You shouldn't be using animal testing and so on to explore, right? You should really be using computers to explore. So that's the paradigm you want to get to. Of course, it's very difficult to model. You know, these are hugely underdetermined systems. There just isn't enough data to really get the model perfectly. So you have to start with clinical endpoints and build out as best as you can and then do lots of experiments. So this is just a schema that shows, for example, you start with some time course of abnormalities in the liver with certain patients and then work backwards and say, what is happening at the molecular level in the liver, right? And this has actually been a theme, I know, in Europe because of the REACH initiative. In a couple of years, you're going to have to do more and more of this kind of work. So this, for example, is a network and a model that captures steatosis, which is a form of toxicity in the liver. Similarly, for necrosis, there are various circuits. So the interesting thing is that when you start looking at biology as a system, it looks more and more like circuits, right? So again, this interplay between information science biology gets very interesting. I remember when I was a graduate student, Salvador Luria used to teach a course at MIT for electrical engineers to learn biology. And that was the book called Lecture Notes in Biology in the MIT Press. And it was actually written to teach biology as an information science. And it was And that is really sort of coming to pass here. Actually today at Strand we actually have a virtual liver of a rat that is good enough for doing preclinical toxicity. And so it's been a huge effort to build. But there are other groups working on different organ systems. So you know, there may be an opportunity to put all of this together. Let me just end with a couple of comments, which is more about industry, economy, development, science, and so on. I think in many ways, for a country like India, and I'm sure that these lessons apply to other countries as well, it's... we are probably somewhere between being an information economy and a biotech economy, right? In the sense that the domestication of technologies is a very important step towards actually transforming your economy from one level to the next. And unless you actually build computers or build networks or build routers and switches and so on, you can't really become an information economy, right? And so for today India has probably somewhere around $70 to $80 billion of business it does in information technology, and that's come about through a hard process, and I think with biotechnology it's just beginning. We're probably around a $4 to $5 billion industry today, and then of course there's the info bio nano sort of loop which will hopefully start up, but this is one way to look at it. I thought I heard Dr. Rockstrom say in the morning that we should never move beyond being hunters and gatherers. I think we've already taken that step. So this is pretty much where we have to be. So let me just end there. Thank you.